So imagine with me for a moment that you travel to Turkey and you locate a small village renowned for its beautiful handmade oriental carpets. And you visit a master craftsman who is in the middle of making one of the most beautiful carpets you've ever seen. He's carefully weaving hand-dyed silks into a sumptuous, intricate pattern with rich colors and symbols. And you chat with the weaver and you discover that it's taken several years and careful planning to make this rug. And you completely fall in love with this carpet. And so you decide to buy it and bring it back to the States. In fact, you love it so much that rather than keep it for yourself, you decide to give it as a precious gift to your brother who has never left the country or traveled abroad. You see your brother rarely since he lives far from you, but you give him this very special carpet as a birthday gift, as a sign of your deep love for him. Your brother thanks you for the gift, but once you've departed, having no particular connection to the carpet, he lays it in his front hallway, not really knowing the meaning or value of this carpet. Over time, his kids track mud all over it. And the carpet starts to look really worn down the middle from being used in the entryway. And then a buddy comes over one evening and he notices a symbol in the top right-hand corner of the rug, and it looks like the symbol for his men's club. So he asks, rather daringly, whether he could cut out that symbol and hang it up at the club. Since the carpet's already quite worn, the brother says, well, sure, go ahead. So the man takes some heavy shears and he cuts off the top right-hand corner of the rug. Then as the carpet starts to fray where it was cut, your sister-in-law sees the different color threads and thinks, they would be great to be able to use to sew an exotic Halloween costume. So she unravels a large part of the right side of the carpet. And then of course it's not looking so good anymore. So they move it out of their entryway and they move the carpet into the garage. And that's where the dog often is left alone. And as you might imagine, the dog pees on the rest of the carpet. So the rug is now stained and stinking and torn. And they decide, well, they better just throw it away. It's taken to a dumpster and now lies rotting in a giant landfill somewhere. A few years later, you return to visit your brother and you ask him, where's the rug? That beautiful rug I gave you. And your brother tells you, oh, it got too worn out and I had to throw it away. Well, you're in shock. This carpet had been so precious to you. You knew the love and the years of labor that had gone into making it. How could this happen? How could he care so little for this precious gift? As you deal with your grief, you realize that your brother had no connection to it. He hadn't seen it made, he hadn't met the weaver, he hadn't known of the thousands of hours that had gone into making it. How could he have known about the silks that had been specially dyed or the love and care that had been poured into making those special designs? He had no relationship to it. And as a result, no sense of its value and how dear it was to you. He saw it as something to use up and discard, not a prized creation that needed care and respect. This is the way we treat our planet Earth, my friends. Many of us have no relationship to it and take it for granted. We've been given this extraordinary gift, whether it came from the Big Bang and evolved into its current form over millions of years, or whether you believe in the Genesis story that God created this beautiful earth for us. Either way, this planet is an extraordinarily precious gift of tremendous beauty, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yes.
Over time, especially since the Industrial Revolution, We've taken it for granted. We've seen and treated our earth as a resource, as if it's merely here for us to conquer, to use up, to plunder and pollute. We valued progress and commerce over balance, humility, and sustainability. We valued consumption over interdependence. Why, you may ask? Well, I think there are many reasons. But the first is because we could. Because it seemed like it would answer our problems in the moment. Because we became disconnected from nature and the land. Because we saw the earth as an unlimited resource to consume, to make us richer, stronger, and more comfortable. Because we didn't treat it as sacred. Because we forgot its value, just like the brother forgot the value of the carpet. So I'd like to pause a moment for grief. Just pause. I'd like to take a moment and grieve how our greed, our lust, our hunger, our thoughtlessness, our disconnection from the earth has led us to devastate the only home we have. Join me in this litany for our earth. I will sing a line, and at the end of each line, you sing, "We grieve," like this. We grieve. And at the very end, we will speak some words together. For our mountains fracked and mined, we grieve. For our forests cut and stripped, we grieve. For our oceans poisoned and choked, we grieve. For our rivers dirtied and drained, we grieve. For our glaciers melting and shrinking, we grieve. For our soil exposed and exhausted, we grieve. For our wetlands dwindling and septic, we grieve. For our air polluted and toxic, we grieve. For all the ways in which we've plundered and harmed our home, we grieve. Now all together, may we become better stewards of our precious home, sustaining and caring for our earth as our beloved. May we resist the endless urge to pillage her resources, to control and dominate this abundant gift. And instead, may we restore, regenerate, and renew our earth. May we preserve, protect, and partner with her, remembering that we are interconnected, remembering to love her and all of her creatures, remembering our lives and our children's futures depend on it. Now, our earth is resilient. Don't get me wrong. She will survive in some form, as she has for millennia through ice ages and mass extinctions. But we humans may not. Because of our ignorance, our greed, our disconnection and short-sightedness, we may succumb to the floods and the fires, the hurricanes and the earthquakes, the pollution and warming that we have caused. We may not survive on an increasingly uninhabitable planet. Unless we do something, and we do it now. Unless we feel our connection to one another and our earth, and we feel it now. Unless we open our hearts to our interconnectedness and live lives that reflect that. So we've talked in other services about individual things that we can do to help preserve our planet. Things like replacing plastic in our lives, eating less meat, driving more eco-friendly cars, raising a vegetable garden, planting trees and nurturing our soil like the boy in the story did. And all of these are important, and I invite us to keep introducing new ways into our individual and communal lives to help our planet thrive. Are you up for that?
Yes.
I'm so glad. But what I most want us to reflect on this week is a bigger picture, a deeper spiritual transformation, a softening of our battle-hardened hearts that's required for us to care enough, to hope enough, and to make change. What I want most for us is to remember that we're not separate from our earth. Though we walk upon her, we are her. We are one of her creatures. What we do to her, we do to ourselves. We are one body of life, one organism, one planet still as yet alive. And we need to see our earth as a living being. The destruction of our planet will only slow when we've realized that we're actually harming ourselves. And harm will not cease until we see nature differently. Not as something to conquer and use up, but as a living being to communicate with. An intimate partner to cooperate with and look out for as you would a beloved, not a separate entity. We are inseparable from our earth. The earth is intimately connected to us. We are the planet's hands and feet and voices. And we can use them to nurture or destroy. Jesus was believed to have said, "Whatever you do to the least of us, you do unto me." And that goes for other humans, for other creatures, and for our earth. What we do to each other, to the earth, we do to ourselves. One of my heroes, ecologist and philosopher Charles Eisenstein, asks, "Do we want to live in a living or a dead world?" Now, we may survive as humans in a lifeless and poisoned world, shut away in concrete boxes, isolated from the toxic environment we've created. But is that what we want, my friends? Is it? The important question he asks is not what do we need to do to survive, but what world do we want to live in? To recognize the power of our choices, what will we summon? Do we want to live into a story of surviving on a dead, used-up planet that is poisonous and dangerous to live in? Or do we want to be part of a story that pictures us on a flourishing, vibrant earth, teeming with billions of life forms that replenish each other and our environment and exist together in a world of beauty and aliveness? Do we want to be able to go outside and lie in the grass and look up at the sky above as we breathe fresh air? Do we want to be able to hike in our mountains and admire spring flowers? Do we want to swim in our oceans and drink from our rivers? Do we?
Yes.
What do we want? Our choices feed aliveness or decay. And it's up to us, up to every single one of us here. It's a big responsibility. Now, we have so much to learn from the wisdom of indigenous traditions that value the land, traditions that have a reciprocal, interdependent relationship with the earth and its creatures. And we have so much to learn from the beating heart of the planet, the Amazon. It's truly the center of our living planet, a living organism, and we need to protect it like we would our own heart. We wouldn't let something come in and destroy our heart, would we? Joanna Macy, Buddhist scholar and ecologist, says, if all the dangers we face from climate chaos to nuclear war, of all, none is so great as the deadening of our response. And Macy has developed a process called the work that reconnects us. And in it, she teaches us that we are still free to choose the version of reality or story about our world that we value and want to serve. We can choose to align with business as usual, the unraveling of living systems, or the creation of a life-sustaining society. And the work that reconnects us takes us through a spiral sequence flowing through four stages, beginning with gratitude, then honoring our pain for the world, seeing with fresh eyes, and then finally going forth. So she encourages us to connect with our love for the planet and then allow ourselves to feel our grief deeply. And this is why I wanted to sing a lament together earlier, to honor our grief at the destruction and greed that we witness, the carelessness and the neglect. And from that sense of interconnection and grief around the harm we're causing a part of ourselves, we see the world with both new and ancient eyes. As a living being. And we go forth and act from there. The work is all about opening our hearts. And instead of allowing the deadening of our response and the shutting down, allowing ourselves to feel and thereby be moved to action. By feeling, by caring, we awaken. So I want to invite you now into a brief visualization. So close your eyes if you feel comfortable and drop your shoulders, put your feet on the floor. Let's breathe in for a count of two and breathe out for a count of four several times. Two, three, four. In, two, and out. Two, three, four. In, two, and out. Two, three, four. Now I want you to imagine that you're in one of your very favorite spots in nature. Perhaps it's by the ocean, or you're up in the mountains, or you're next to a clear flowing river, or you're in a forest. Take a moment and really visualize your favorite spot in nature. Imagine you're sitting or lying down in your special place. Take in the air. Breathe in its fresh smells and flavor. Listen to the sounds around you. Notice if there are any creatures near you. What are the colors that you see? How does your body feel in this place? Now truly soak it in. Notice the delight and peace you feel in this beautiful place. And now imagine that you've gone home and then you've returned there years later. And your beautiful, precious place has either been bulldozed or mined or fracked or paved over and built on. It has been destroyed and used up. It has become a concrete jungle or a mine or a toxic waste site. It is no longer recognizable as the place you loved. All around you are sharp edges and bad smells. There's no life to be seen. There's concrete and hardness. What sounds do you hear now? What colors do you see? Can you breathe the air, or is it too toxic? Do you need to wear an oxygen mask? What do you feel? How does your body feel in this place? How does your heart feel? Now, you may feel some natural grief around this. Stay with it if you can. Feel your sadness. Feel the pain. You may never be able to get back your beautiful nature spot. It's too late. Stay with the sorrow. Now gently open your eyes, my friends. What do we want? Our choices every day feed aliveness or decay. And it's up to us. In every moment, we are choosing who we are and what we want. I know what I want. I want to serve life. I want to live on a planet teeming with life forms, filled with color, clean air, complex textures, good smells, sounds, and vibrancy. How about you? What do you want? This is a spiritual crisis, my friends, a crisis of life and death, a true crossroads. What path will we take? Who will we be as a species and individuals? Will you let beautiful nature lure you, or short-term material gain? The future is up to us. May we paint pictures in our lives of beauty and aliveness.
A parking lot.
Now I know that some of you may be feeling the grief that we feel for our Earth. I invite you not to run away from that grief, but to allow that grief to move you into action, and to allow that grief to claim what we have, the beautiful Earth that we have now, that is just calling for us to care for her. Are you up to that?